One question was that who inspired you, you see, to do the work you do? And I said one of my most, the inspiration is somewhat classical. It is really Greek, Roman, Gothic, Romanesque, Renaissance architecture. It stands there constantly as a marvelous challenge for what I do now. And then from that kind of general thing sits another man who is most significant to me, and that's Le Corbusier, most significant to me. Now the significance, of course, lies in the images that he created, but I always sensed that that the image belongs to him, that I never copy him, you see. But what activated a sense of architecture in me was really he, and not the old stuff. The old stuff was ready there to be plucked, you might say. They were so very general in their way that no personality really entered the thing at all. And he, in his case, there was a personality who said certain things differently from anyone else. But he was answerable to what would later become the common stuff called architecture. And so and I always wanted to work for him. But I always felt, well, if I were a youngster, I'd work readily for him. And because I must find my own way, so it made me reluctant to work for him, you see. Now when I did the bathhouse, the Trenton bathhouse, where I discovered a very simple thing. I discovered that certain spaces are very unimportant, and some spaces are the real raison d'etre for doing what you're doing. But the small spaces were contributing to the strength of the larger spaces. They were serving them. And when I realized that there were servant areas and there were areas served, that difference, that distinction, after this distinction, I say, though it was a very simple building, I realized I didn't have to work for Corbusier anymore. At that moment, I realized I don't have to work for him at all. The seminal idea, you see, of my work is the constant distinction between the areas that are served and the areas that serve. That distinguishes, in my opinion, modern architecture from old architecture, because the spaces, the servant spaces, are different in every age. You still have round rooms, you still have great halls, you still have life from above or below. You see, you can't get away from the fact that a space enclosed, you see, is of a nature quite like other spaces of old. The Pantheon is a beautiful example, you see, of a terrific space, which you can't surpass no matter what age. You see, it really spells enclosure, it spells a world of its own, and that's what a building is. The building is a world of its own. You see, in the laboratories at Pennsylvania, University of Pennsylvania, I realized that the air you breathe should not come in contact with the air you throw away in a laboratory. So that's a rule I made. So therefore, I put all the exhaust towers high, and I put all the air intakes low on the other side. It never comes in contact with it. Now this shaped the building, don't you see? That gave shape to the building. Around this realization, which I call a realization, immediately many things went into orbit. City planning became absolutely clear to me at that point, because I realized that a plan of a city had to distinguish between that which serves, you see, the spaces of the city, or I say, the institutions within which the spaces live. The institutions live in the spaces. Everything we build for an institution. It's the institution of home, it's the institution of learning, institution of government, institution of recreation, institution of health. They are all institutions. Every single thing that we establish as part of a way of life is an instituted thing. It's a supported thing. From this, I derive the idea that there is a difference between the viaduct architecture and the architecture of the institutions of man. The institutions of man sit as in the complexity of movement, which is part of the viaduct architecture, in contrast with the toughness, you see, of the viaduct architecture and the gossamer delicacy, see, of the buildings of the institutions of man. To me, it is a beautiful distinction, because buildings know how they should be built, and roads know how they should be, and as the roads enter the city, they change their character, because they're entering precious areas. Viaduct architecture is the architecture of movement, which involves coming from distant spaces and our major concern to the city. When they are entering the city, they must be more respectable. Their construction must be finer. And because they occupy very strategic spaces, as expressways do, they must contain more than just the road itself. And therefore, that road must be considered as a building on which you're riding the roof of. On the roof of. Below which are pipes, below which may be storage places for both the car and wares and goods, let's say, for the service of the city.